I'm Jordan Weitzman, and you're listening to Magic Hour. It was so nice getting together with Genesis Buzz to catch up and hear about what she's been up to. We first met at Skowhegan a few summers ago, a time when she was just coming out of grad school at Yale. Since then, she started teaching at Pratt in the New School, has a book coming out next year with Capricious, and this past month opened a show with Jenny Kalivas in Justine Kerlin's studio space called Silt of Each Other. Genesis' work often deals with her roots growing up between the U.S. and Puerto Rico. It's sometimes surreal, other times more steeped in reality, and always leaves the meaning of what you're looking at open to interpretation.
When I was in graduate school, I only made video and moving images for a while. And then I realized that I could do something similar with photographs, that I could, instead of the image moving, I could have the viewer's eye move, right? Like throughout the frame.
Was it more, was it like more of a challenge or a different kind of?
It almost feels like Mission Impossible or something, right? To like create movement with something that is so inherently still and frozen, right? Yeah. You're literally freezing movement. For example, I'm thinking about the picture of the two girls leaning into each other at a restaurant, whispering into each other's ear, and one is tracing the edge of a cup of water, right? That to me feels like it's so much about movement in a bunch of ways. Like, first of all, your eye is moving around the rectangle, the picture plane, right? There are things coming in from the edges of the picture, and there multiple things are kind of illuminated throughout the picture. So your eye is literally moving around. But then there's there's the girl who is like tracing the rim of the cup of water, and then all of a sudden you start to kind of fill in the blank of that sound. And I'm like, oh, can you make a photograph about sound? Can you make a photograph about movement?
That's really interesting. And then of course there's the whisper.
And then
I mean, I love
whisper.
That photo. It's an amazing photo, by the way.
And
I love that photo. It's interesting to hear you talk about movement and sound as in terms of like what it's actually, what it's about, because that whisper, to me, I always go to the whisper first, and that is, that's the thing that keeps you going back. I mean, I've been reading this amazing, Philip Guston book, these interviews with him. And, there's just this great section where he's talking about the enigma and what it means. And to me, that and just how it's the enigma that keeps you coming back to something, coming back to an image, whether a painting or a photo. And that, I don't know, that picture really does that. It's like, I don't know, the whisper, the secret, you know, you want to know what it is, but it never resolves itself.
But it never resolves itself, and you kind of have to complete it, or maybe not complete it, because it never really resolves itself, but then like you become part of the... like you have to fill in the blank. You have to kind of then try to imagine what that whisper sounds like or feels like.
Right. You know? But what's interesting is that I've never thought about it in terms of the sonic relationship.
Yeah, totally. And actually that was what I think drew me to, one of the things that drew me to video too, was this whole other dimension that was sound. And sound to me is fascinating because it's invisible, right? But it's present, right? So something, and that's something that I think a lot about in when I'm making photographs, like how can I make a photograph of something that is invisible? Or how can I use the visible world to trace something invisible? If that makes sense. Yeah, so that photograph of the girls in the restaurant and the whisper, which is actually called The Sound of a Circle, that was like my bridge. That was my transition photo from making video clips for a year and being really lost and not really knowing what I was doing and not, and kind of unsure if I wanted to be making video work or go into filmmaking.
So how did you go about starting to make photos? Like, and just sticking on that one in particular, I mean, was it like, that photo looks real. Mm. It looks like it's really happening. But was it? I mean, was it like, yeah?
So you're asking, like, was that something that I directed or was it something that I like responded to that was just like happening and I took a picture of it?
Is that what you're asking? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So actually I had been trying to make a picture of a whisper for many years. And I tried it with myself and somebody else. I tried it with a couple other people. It didn't work. Like, it just like wasn't, I don't really know what I was looking for, but whatever image would emerge didn't resonate with me. I tried that picture with those two girls, Lily and Brianna, who were teenagers living in New Haven. And we tried making that picture in my studio. It didn't work. And then one day we went out for lunch because I casted them and to make a bunch of pictures. And we're going to get lunch before we started making photos. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, after we finished lunch, the light moved into the restaurant. Mm. It was hitting in the right way. And everyone's guard was down a little bit because we're all relaxed and we just had food. And so I directed the image in that moment. Like, I kind of moved the plates away and I was like, okay, Lily, now can you like lean into Brianna and like tell her a secret? And then Brianna started to trace the cup of water by herself. So it was both somewhere between like directing and improvising.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. And yeah, it's funny how it almost doesn't matter. I mean, because the picture looks the way it looks, which is, you know, sort of the only thing that matters. But it is interesting when that happens.
Right. And I think something that photography uniquely allows you to work with, right? Like all of the things that are kind of unfolding and presenting themselves to you all around you all the time. So I like to invite those things in. For example, there were crumbs on the table that actually kind of mimic these Christmas lights that are in like the background, which also mimic her, Brianna's little yellow hair clips, right? It's like, that's like an incredible kind of like a chance, moment of chance. But then I do like the intentionality of, kind of starting an image with a gesture or with an idea. And kind of bringing some parameters to then kind of improvise within.
Right, I relate to that. It's like a starting point.
It's a starting point.
You need a starting point. Yeah. And I don't know if it's the same in your experience, but it's never usually what you expect. I mean, I think that's the exciting part.
Yeah, and there's so much that you can't see in the moment of making a photograph, because when you're looking through the viewfinder, you know, you can't look at all of the things at once. It's like, I'm focusing on, you know, making sure that the person's face is in focus. And then when I look at the photograph, I'm realizing there was so much more that I couldn't see in the moment.
Yeah. It's like that Friedlander thing, you know, he has like a really great quote to it.
Exactly.
It's like photography is a really generous medium, you know? Yeah. You just wanted like the dog or the uncle in front of the car or something, and you end up getting all this other stuff.
You know, photography can sometimes feel like such an extension of sight of what it was that you were looking at, but you really need... Again, you can't look at it. Like, I'm looking at your living room right now, and I can only really look at one thing at a time, and then I see things in the periphery, right? But a photograph can put everything kind of in focus, right? Or with the slowness of a photograph, I can kind of look at everything at once. So it's actually not exactly the way we see our eyes function.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. This was actually David Hockney's obsession with those joiners. Do you know those photos?
No.
Like the one he would like, he was literally super interested in exactly what you're describing and literally how we see. He was like obsessed with the cubists and like, you know, that, I don't know, sort of, I don't know, description of how we see, and brought that into photography. And so he took many photos of let's say this room, and then join them together. So you had this tapestry of photos.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about. They're like a collage.
Exactly.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I then and it's like a collage of like details in the thing because of like. And he was literally saying exactly what you're describing.
Yeah, exactly. Like flat, he's like flattening all of the perspectives like into one.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. which then also kind of reminds me a little bit of cubism, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Like cubism kind of flattening all of these various perspectives into one.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So but that's a tangent.
Tangents are good. Tangents are good. Because this is, you know, doing these kinds of conversations, I feel like it's very similar to taking photos.
Mm.
Like you come in, you can do your homework, you could have all your preconceived ideas,
mm-hmm.
and then,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're talking with someone,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you start talking about sound, and I had not thought of sound, you know, at all. Like it wasn't in my homework,
mm-hmm.
but it's super interesting.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
it's always this push and pull between do you go in the direction you initially had intended or do you follow the conversation or follow
exactly. And for me, that really resonates with the process of art making. It's like whatever plan you have is just to get you out the door,
right.
you know, and get you started. But then the things that end up emerging, which usually you end up kind of picking up with time. It's like you make something and the more you pay attention to it, like over time, over the years, it just keeps revealing and conjuring new ideas, which is fascinating. And those are like usually way more interesting than like the original thing that you thought the work was going to be about.
Totally. So let me ask you a question. So you were just talking about, you know, sort of moving from, I don't know, film to photography.
Mm.
And, you know, we were just talking about that one particular image, which is, I don't know, it has surreal qualities to it, but it's very mm-hmm. steeped in reality.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But you have, so that's, I feel like, one mode of your picture making, mm-hmm. but then you also have another mode, which is mm-hmm. more abstract,
mm-hmm.
more surreal,
mm-hmm.
more dreamy.
Mm-hmm.
When did that other mode come into being?
When I'm making pictures, for example, with mirrors, which are maybe some of the ones that you might be thinking about when mm-hmm. when you ask me that question, there are pictures of like mirrors in snow or like a mirror leaning against this green wall. And then, you know, it's casting all sorts of crazy shadows. For me, first and foremost, it feels like a relief to work very slowly. Like there is like I enjoy also like working alone as well as working with people.
Yes.
Like I'm like very, I feel very split in that way. Like I can be very social, but I can also be very kind of hermetic.
Wow. We are so on the same page.
Really?
Yeah. I've been thinking about that a lot lately too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually feel like I need both. And I feel like these quiet, you know, processes that allow me to be more like hermetic, and quiet energize me. But anyhow, yeah, you know, those pictures, I actually kind of think about them in terms of like a fragmentation. There's like a fragmentation of like the picture, and we have like multiple perspectives. Actually, this kind of relates to what we were just talking about a minute ago. Like multiple perspectives are being presented to us. And like flattened into one picture plane.
Mm-hmm.
There is also, I just keep thinking about this picture specifically of like the mirrors in the snow. Like there's this disorientation that's happening where it's like, are we looking at the sky or is this like a cloudscape, a skyscape, or is this, you know, or is this foam, or is this like the ground covered in snow? And that disorientation feeling yeah, like it kind of ties into some of the things that I'm thinking about in the other pictures. Like, I feel like they're all kind of talking about similar ideas, but usually using different languages, which relates to my lived experience, right? Of like occupying various identities, which we all do, of course, but specifically for me, like growing up speaking multiple languages, growing up like existing in various cultures simultaneously.
What language did you speak growing up?
Spanish. Mm-hmm. I spoke Spanish.
You spoke Spanish at home?
Yeah, I spoke Spanish before I spoke English, actually.
It's my
first language. Yeah. So this kind of like oscillating between various languages and modes of expression is kind of how my brain works.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's kind of like a long roundabout way of explaining it, but it feels very natural to me.
Right. I'm really interested in that, in the whole together and alone thing, because... Oftentimes you get into it like an introvert extrovert discussion, and you sort of need to pick sides. But I you know, I feel like so often I think of, you know, why can't you be a bit of both?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Having both those kind of, I don't know, predispositions. Or...
Yeah, totally. And it just like depends on the context and depends on the conditions that you're in. Like sometimes I really. Yeah, like I really like crave that social connection, or like a picture or an idea really needs that set of conditions in order for interesting things to emerge. And then sometimes it can be simpler than that. Sometimes it can be like a piece of cutout paper on a wall.
Sure. You know, it's so interesting that we're talking about this, because sometimes you have certain things you're thinking about, you know, and I don't know. You don't, I don't know, you don't make the assumption that someone else is thinking about them too. But in this, you know, in my book, as I was working on the edit, thinking about these exact same ideas and how I hadn't thought about them in making the pictures, but in putting them together and thinking about the relationships between the two, it almost became all about that for me. You know, and then finding these other kind of, I don't know, contrasts or relationships, you know, being with people and being alone, being, you know, inside, outside, you know, being inside and being outside, being at home and then wandering in the world. And it's so interesting to see how other people express those same ideas, like the way you're speaking about with those two kind of modes of picture making, like that kind of, I don't know, seeing stuff in the world versus construction. Or versus,
Yeah, totally. And sometimes they kind of need each other or something. Like I'm thinking about, they feel like, okay, I'm going to bring it back to sound again.
Yeah.
They feel like different notes or like different instruments or something, right? Like in a composition. Sometimes one picture or one kind of picture, right, whether it's like the ones outside versus the ones inside, or the more abstract ones versus the ones like based in a more kind of recognizable reality, that they kind of exalt each other, and you kind of need both.
You know
to like really appreciate the other or something.
Totally. So does that I don't know, does all this relate to to how you edit? Or how you think about, I don't know, bookmaking?
Oh, yeah. So that's all very new to me. But bookmaking is very new to me. I'm so excited about it.
You're working on a new book now.
I'm working on a new book.
You won the Capricious, is it the Photo Book Award?
Yeah, the Capricious Photo Award.
Photo Award.
Yep. Right. Yeah, which is an award to make a book with Capricious Publishing. So I start that next year in 2023.
Amazing.
I am so excited.
Yeah. So the book is going to come out next year, but you've started working on it?
So we start working on it next year. Yeah, because this year there were two winners. Roberto Tondopo, who is based in Mexico, and myself. And Roberto starts their book now. So whenever they finish Roberto's book, then I begin making mine. So my book probably won't be out for at least another year, if not a little bit longer. but I'm so excited.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a great thing to look forward to. Yeah. Do you have any titles in mind yet?
Oh my God, I have no idea.
No idea?
But I feel like when I think about the actual book, I sense something blue. Like, I just keep thinking blue. I mean, I'm, you know, for...
Yeah, you're in
you
blue
guys
today.
Can't see me, but like, I'm wearing a blue onesie.
Yeah.
Like a blue jumpsuit. I love blue.
Very exciting. Yeah. And you just did that little publication with... is it Matariles?
Yeah, Matarile. Yeah, Matarile Ediciones. Yeah, so I made this zine book with Malta Naranjo Sandoval, who's a genius. She's amazing.
Yeah, I met her the other day at Dashwood.
She's incredible.
She's great. Yeah.
And she, that process of editing that zine with her was such an education in bookmaking and also in my own work, like the things I was able to see that I couldn't see before just from decontextualizing and recontextualizing images was so fascinating. It's like, oh, I thought I knew what this image was about, or I thought I saw everything there was to see in this picture, and then suddenly now it's next to this other picture and I'm seeing all this other stuff. That felt like a really great kind of experience in editing and bookmaking. It got me all excited about this new book that's coming out with Capricious.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I got a little taste of it.
For sure. I'm Jordan Weitzman, and you're listening to my conversation with Genesis Baez that we recorded in New York. To find out more about the show and our books, visit us at magichourphoto.org.
When I sent some of the zines to Puerto Rico over the summer to my family, and then like checking the tracking and seeing that it was like in my aunt's mailbox waiting for her to come home from work, and that like it, you know, that it was so accessible and could just like, it was just like moving around the world, and you know, suddenly my family could see my work not on a screen, but like hold it and have it in their home.
For sure.
So
you still have quite a bit of family there?
Yeah, most of my family is there. My parents and my brother are here in the States, and I actually have some cousins that I just learned about this summer and met who live here in the Lower East Side, who aren't far, like kind of live around the corner from here.
Oh wow!
And we reconnected, and I have my godmothers in Chicago, and so I have some family in the States, but the majority of my family is in Puerto Rico.
Mm. And how are they all doing lately?
Yeah, they're okay. Like in the immediate sense, I mean, it's early October as we are recording this. So there was Hurricane Fiona just hit Puerto Rico a couple weeks ago, and a lot of people are still without power. It's very intense. My family regained power and water, and they're doing as okay as one can be in this time, but it's like, it's very stressful.
Yeah.
It's very stressful.
For sure.
But they're okay.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah. So what else have you been up to lately? You teach as well, right?
I teach.
Where do you teach?
I teach, I adjunct at both Pratt Institute in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And at Parsons.
Yeah.
Here in Manhattan. I teach undergrads and grad students.
Mm-hmm.
Teach photography, teach video.
Wow.
I'm teaching 3 classes this semester. I'm tired.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, but I love my students. I have really, really great students this semester.
Yeah.
I mean, every semester I have some great students, but I've met some really special people in the last month. And then next semester, I'm going to actually be temporarily relocating or splitting my time between Williamstown, Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
and Brooklyn, because I'm going to be teaching at Williams College,
mm.
which I'm very excited about. So I was invited was like a guest professor there for the semester. And as you might know, I grew up in Massachusetts, or part of my life I spent in Massachusetts. Right. So I'm actually really excited to be, even though when I lived there, I couldn't wait to get out, but I'm really excited to kind of go back there and actually make some work there.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's on the horizon. And speaking of being both extrovert and a hermit, I'm really looking forward to, yeah, like being a bit of a hermit in Western Mass. You mm-hmm. know, I think that those times of isolation can be really generative. And with like the book coming up too, where, it would be really good.
Where more specifically did you grow up in Mass?
I grew up in a town called Attleboro, which is about 40 minutes south of Boston. It's mm-hmm. on the east side of Massachusetts. So it's fairly different to where I'll be living next month. The town I grew up in was like, at one time was very industrial, lots of factories. It's like a small factory town outside Boston.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Where is Dorchester?
Dorchester is part of the like greater Boston metro area.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you been to Dorchester?
No, I haven't, but I don't know why Dorchester Days just popped into my head. That Eugene Richards photo book.
Oh, yeah.
It's an amazing book, and it's one of the first books that someone turned me on to it. Her name was Marilyn, and her name is Marilyn. And yeah, she was super important to me. First getting into photography, we would hang out, and she'd show me photo books. And and that was one of the first ones that she showed me that really kind of, I don't know, got me going.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, all like pictures from Dorchester, but like, you know, beautiful, beautiful. And also hard, very hard pictures.
Yeah, 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 interesting. That reminds me of one of the first photo books that got me really excited, which is a really complicated book for many reasons, but it was Bruce Davidson's East 100th Street.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, because it was one of the first photo books where I saw Puerto Rican people like in photographs. So I can relate. I can relate to what you're describing.
How do you think about it now?
Well, I think it's complicated, right, for a person who wasn't from Spanish Harlem to be going into these apartments, and people's lives were very difficult, and there was, the pictures depict a lot of suffering, and yeah, like I wonder, it just feels complicated, right, for someone who wasn't experiencing that suffering to kind of go in there and depict that suffering, right, and then ultimately like where does the book go, where do the photographs live afterwards, do the people who are in them see them? But one thing that is kind of interesting about those photographs is that they were actually used in a lot of tenant law organizing,
mm-hmm.
and tenants' rights organizing, as kind of proof of like, look how difficult people's lives are, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, and one of the many reasons is because landlords are exploiting people, right? And there are very little laws protecting tenants. Like, this needs to change. Sure. So it's interesting that those photographs were actually kind of part of that.
Yeah, and they had some kind of positive effect.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. But also, you know, I'm just thinking of this thing that someone told me recently about Jean-Luc Godard, who just passed away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone wrote this little piece who studied under the filmmaker and photographer Babette Mongault, who is French and I think knew Godard. And she was speaking about him, and this student said something like, you know, how could you speak, you know, he's such a chauvinist, like animal, like how could you really, you know, praise him? And Babette said something like, yes, he's a pig, but you have to look at all of his films. He's a pig, but you have to look at all of his films. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a similar, I'm not saying Bruce Davidson, I'm not making that analogy of him being a pig. I mean,
sure, he's a
lovely man. But, you know, even with work that might be problematic, you know, looking through it, a new lens, it's okay to hold those two together.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, right. And we, like, we have critical thinking skills. We're, like, you know, sensitive people, and we can kind of, you know, I don't think we need to, like, censor that work or, like, not show it or not look at it, right? Like, necessarily. But I think it is important to kind of, like, be critical of it, but I can still, like, look at it. Right.
And definitely.
Maybe learn something from it. But you know, it's interesting actually that, like, going back to your book about Dorchester, right? That, like, another kind of overlap, aside from, like, maybe the time and when these pictures were made, was that the parameter was place, right? It was like Dorchester, the neighborhood of Dorchester in Boston, the neighborhood of you know, Spanish Harlem and Manhattan, like, that was the parameter. And that, like, this idea of place is something that kind of haunts me in my work, and is kind of central to my work, actually, even if, like, a place isn't directly depicted in my images. So when I started making photographs, place was a specific place was my container, right? I was going back to Puerto Rico, or kind of like the first big kind, or not big, but like the first kind of substantial body of work I made in Puerto Rico. I was living in Boston after college, which is where I went to college also, and I was working, you know, whatever, like, job I could, that I could kind of quit soon after, and save up a little bit of money. And then I would go to Puerto Rico and make photographs there. And then I would come back and I was making photographs, like, in my family's house and on their land, basically. Whereas now, I think one of the things I'm working through is how complicated the idea of place can be when, for example, I've been reading the poetry of Warsun Shire, and she has this poem called Home, and one of the lines says, no one leaves home unless home won't let you stay. And this idea of home not letting you stay and, like, a place not letting you stay really resonates with me. And thinking about, like, my family's migration to the United States from Puerto Rico, and the layers and generations of migration that have happened, like, before my lifetime, in the present, and surely into the future, of people leaving Puerto Rico, and, like, how complex the idea of home or belonging to a geographical place is. In our current times, because of climate change, because of various political crises, right?
It's important.
It's important. Yeah. And can you, like, take a place, like, can a place live inside of you somehow, you know?
Right. So not necessarily dealing with the actual place itself, but more as this, I don't know.
Yeah.
Something that is inside you that you can manifest
wherever
you are.
Exactly. Like, the mark of a place on you, you know, like, how has a place shaped you, for example, you know, and can place be conjured, you know, anywhere? Like, my mom has this, like, lime green wall in her living room that is so interesting to me, that just, like, looks like the jungle that used to be in her mother's yard. And, you know, or can, like, a sense of belonging be conjured, like, between, instead of belonging to a place, like, can you conjure belonging, like, between people, you know, or, like,
yeah,
like, what other, right, like, what alternate ways of belonging, right, exist or can we be a part of,
right,
without place.
Right. That's what's floating around.
Mm-hmm.
Floating around up there.
Floating around up there. It's interesting that you say that, because I've been collecting images of dust storms, actually, like Saharan dust. Do you know about this?
No.
Okay. So every year, I think multiple times a year, Saharan dust from the Saharan desert, really, really tiny ground down particles of sand, get swept up into the air and carried across the Atlantic Ocean and spread throughout like Caribbean nations, sometimes like the south of the United States, southeast of the United States. And I first learned about it in Puerto Rico when I noticed that like the sky would be really pale blue on some days. I'm like, what is that? Is that haze? Is that smog? Like I'm having a harder time breathing than usual. And then I realized that it was literal earth.
Wow.
From the other part of the world, you know, this, the other side of the world. It's kind of carried in a cloud across the ocean and then kind of dispersed throughout. And it was just kind of this really interesting metaphor, you know, in a way for like, yeah, place can be watery. Yeah.
And move. That's crazy. I'd never heard of that. That's that's very, it's wild to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Is that actually true? How does that actually?
Yeah, it's true. We can look it up. I can show you like GIFs. I have like a whole folder of like NASA GIFs on my hard drive. And it's crazy because it's really beautiful. Like the image, like the meteorological image is like really fascinating. But on the ground, it's like really hard for people. Like my brother, for example, like it bothers his lungs, and anyone who's kind of asthmatic, like, you know, it's not, it's harmful to people.
Crazy. Yeah.
Like you're literally breathing in earth.
Yeah. I mean, you make a lot of work about clouds in the sky. I mean,
yeah.
it's a big subject matter for you.
Yeah, totally. Anything that is like shape-shifting. Like I love things that are kind of constantly shape-shifting or like resist a single form. Yeah, clouds are like that for me. And then these dust clouds are that for me, right? It's this like place that is constantly shape-shifting.
Yeah. Love it. I have to say, this has been so nice doing this with you today.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I feel like we went in all kinds of interesting directions that,
yeah.
I don't know, I hadn't thought of. And
that's always how it happens.
It's always how it happens.
It's like the art practice. It's like making art.
Totally. Totally. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with Genesis Buzz that we recorded in New York. This episode is produced by me, Jordan Weitzman, and was edited by Ellen Payne Smith. Original music for the show by Adam Feingold. To find out more about the show and our books that we've published over the past year and a half, visit us at magichourphoto.org and follow us on Instagram at magichourpodcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Happy holidays and see you next year.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.